This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Don't you wish everything was more rewarding? With Rakuten, almost everything is. You can earn cash back on those new shoes you've been wanting. You can save on the next trip you book. You can cash in on groceries. Just join. Shop your favorite brands and save. Sephora, Boots, Argus, Temu, Adidas, Trip.com. The list is long. Save online at over 550 stores. And when it's time to redeem those rewards, get your money exactly how you want it. Choose bank transfer or PayPal. So go ahead, take a trip, fill a cart, get a new outfit. Rakuten is a world of rewards. Join today for free. Go to rakuten.co.uk or get the app. That's Rakuten.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. Forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just delight in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight and won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. I gotta be completely honest with you guys. My tail is dragging this week. I'm running on fumes. And I'm just trying to get a lot done in a short amount of time, and I think I'm just putting more mental stress on myself than needed. It also doesn't help when kids don't let you sleep, which seems to be a growing problem in this household at times. So my wife told me I'm a little bit irritable and cranky this evening, and there could be good reason for that. It's probably a combination of work and sleep that's getting me. So here's a serious question for you guys. When you have moments like that, whether it's something that just drives you nuts, brings you down, you know, work, experiences that are bad, something, what have you, and, you know, maybe you're sleep deprived, maybe you're deprived of something that is just keeping you from being your normal self. What is it that continues to drive you through and push through at those times? Serious question. For a long time, the answer to that for me was, well, there's brighter days ahead. There's hunting to be done. There's hunting seasons to look forward to. There's hunting preparations to look forward to. And I got to be real with you guys. That's slowly fading a little bit. Not that I'm not excited about hunting season. Not that I'm not excited about the preparations and everything, what have you. I love all that stuff. I still love it. But it's not what's driving me. And finding what drives me is a unique conversation. And it's just making me realize more and more that day after day, hour after hour, minute after minute, I cannot do this life without some greater help. That's just all there is to it. And I've shared with some of you guys before that that greater help is Jesus. And there is power in the sacrifice that he has given us. When you think about the actions that we have on a daily basis that are less than ideal, and what they're called for, it says in Scripture that in order to pay count for those repercussions, that blood must be shed. And that blood should have been me. But instead, somebody took a free gift. They said, I'll take that burden for you so you can continue to live your life. There's a lot of weight to that. And I think in this day and age, in this culture and everything else, we forget about that. I forget about that. I don't take that seriously enough. But there's a shift in my life. And I have to say more and more that that is what's motivating me. Because I feel the weight of that event more and more. And with that, what drives me is that you guys, if you don't feel that weight, if you don't even know that event, that you would come to know that and feel peace in that. Because hunting doesn't drive me anymore. Sometimes it does. I have moments where it does. I have moments where it clouds my judgment too. But man, I can't look through work right now and no sleep and house projects, spackling. I'm a terrible spackler, by the way. You know, not that many major things in my life right now. It's just a lot on my plate, right? Planning ahead and events and trying to be there for a lot of people and stretching yourself a little bit on the thinner side at times. It's not hunting that gets me through that anymore. It's something else. Guess I needed to have a little bit of a session to talk that out for myself and admit that in reality. And hopefully that means something to you guys too. If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, if you're listening to this and you're continuing to listen to it and you're questioning, I would love to talk to about it with you more. Please don't ever hesitate to talk to somebody. And if that somebody is me, reach out to me. Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast, Facebook and Instagram, pawoodsmanpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to talk with you. All right, enough of my rambling. This week's episode, Mr. Ron Metzer. Now, I was able to join the Tracks and Tackle podcast a few weeks ago with he and Chris, and a bunch of good dudes. Great message and a great goal that these guys share. And we're going to talk about it on this week's episode, but a big part of it relies on building a community. and a sense of belonging, a little bit outside of just the hunt, right? That camp feel, that camp desire. And Ron's going to talk a little bit about, you know, his upbringing, his hunting, and then like what kind of snowballed his podcast and this desire to have culture, a belonging. I don't know what the word is, but this camaraderie culture that he emphasizes so greatly within Tracks and Tackle. We're going to get into his passion and pursuit and bow hunting. He's going to talk some bow hunting stories and talk a little bit about his pursuit and just how he likes to hunt his own hunt and you hunt your own hunt kind of deal. It was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it with Ron. Please check out Ron and the Tracks and Tackle collaborative and podcast, everything that he's got going on. Good stuff. Quick shout out to our partners, and we'll switch gears here. Radix Hunting. Please check out radixhunting.com and all the gear they have to offer, from tree stands, trail cameras, blinds. Love their blind series. Check out the the Monarch series blinds. Huntworth. Quality hunting gear. 90% the quality, 50% the cost. Check out huntworthgear.com. I'm a big fan of the Durham pants, the Sheldon hoodie. I love the Elkin series midweight stuff. A lot of versatility in Pennsylvania hunting with a couple of the things that I'm out there. Heat boost if you're a cold person. Check out Huntworth. They got some pretty cool patterns. Love everything about what they got going on. Lastly, Little Mountain Outfitters. Richland, Pennsylvania, littlemountainoutfitters.com. Stop in their store. Check out what they have. Support their business. Awesome archery company. A lot of knowledge in that store. And if you're not local to Richland, but you want that local bow shop feel, go to littlemountainoutfitters.com. Check out what they have. Any purchases you make using the code Woodsman10, that's Woodsman10, you can get 10% off of your next purchase. Have a great week, guys. Catch you on the next one. Here's Ron.
All right, my turn to interview you, Mr. Ron Mentzer. Thank you very much for joining my show this time. I got to be on your show a few weeks ago and get to swap it out. So thanks for joining, man. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. This is actually, it's fun to be able to hop in here because usually I'm the guy on our show doing the interviewing and trying to put together the questions to ask and that sort of stuff. So it's awesome to just be able to come in here and tell stories and hang out and be the guest.
So when I was on your show, you and Chris were both hosting and stuff. But when you do a podcast and you're the solo host, do you come to the show with a list of questions or topics that you want to discuss with people, or do you kind of shoot from the hip? Because I can tell you about 90% of the time, man, it's whatever's off the top of my head with my guests.
It never goes the way, like if I come with a plan, it's kind of like that in life, you know, with, you know, you want to have a plan, you know, but God orders our footsteps. So, you know, I come in with an agenda of what I want to talk about and just some icebreaker questions for my guests. But, you know, wherever it goes naturally, we like to have those, we call them like tailgate conversations. So parking lot conversations, whatever you want to call them, campfire talks. Just once you get the ice broken and the conversation rolling, it wherever it takes us.
Well, one of the reasons I started doing that, because I used to come with an agenda too, but I interviewed so many people that had never done a podcast before, and they were really nervous to do it. And like the minute that you put a microphone in front of them or they knew they were being recorded, their just whole demeanor changed and the way they talk changed, and they were nervous and this and that. So I'm just like, look, I'm done with I'm mostly going to be done with the whole preconceived notion of how this conversation is going to go, and I want to make it feel as natural as possible. But it's nice too when you do have specific things you like to talk about. I gotta be real though, sometimes specific things to talk about during the month of February is a little bit rough for me.
It's a slow month, right? It's a short month, but it's slow in the outdoor hunting world. You know, I know exactly what you're talking about, Mitchell, even with my own family. Like when I started the podcast, and I can give you a little bit of my history and as we get into the conversation stuff, but whenever I started the podcast, I had this idea of telling stories and sharing camp stories. We're big on family and doing things, capturing those memories and sharing the stories and that sort of stuff with other people. And so if you go back to when we first started, we... we didn't know what we were doing. We still don't know what we're doing, you know, but we're having fun doing it. And so a lot of it was, I cut my teeth on hunting. My older brother taught me a lot, right? My older brother's got 13 years on me. And so, you know, whenever I was 12 and getting into being old enough to go hunting, you know, he was off, you know, he's already married and started his own life, but he took the time and taught me a lot as a young hunter and a young woodsman. And so I learned a lot about fishing and hunting and the outdoors from my brother. Awesome guy, looked up to him. He was the best man at my wedding, still one of my best friends, and he can tell stories. But if you put a microphone in front of him, he's gonna clam up and get that, you know, that's, I don't want to say stage fright, but the storytelling stops.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you almost need to catch him in candid moments, you know, where he's just telling the story and he can be the center of a room and get the whole room going. But if he knows you're recording him, it changes. So we see that. And I think your guest, whoever you have on, your guest is going to like play a role in that. Some people are really, really great guests and they just talk and they tell stories and get the ball rolling. And then you have other people that it's like pulling teeth. And so having the right guest really impacts the way the podcast turns out.
Oh, you're 100% right. And you did give a little bit of background about yourself in that, and I appreciate that. I was going to ask you, you know, introduce yourself. You know, you have a podcast, you've got other media outlets, you're an avid Pennsylvania hunter. You know, what else would you like people to know about you as we dive into this conversation?
Sure. So, you know, my name's Ron Menser. I am, I'm the host of an outdoor podcast, Tracks and Tackle. You know, we like to tell stories about the outdoors, hunting, fishing, and we really get to meet a lot of cool people through that venue. I'm born and raised central Pennsylvania, you know, grew up in the Gettysburg, Adams County area, and I live in the central PA now. I'm a businessman. What do I want people to know about me? I feel like my connection to nature, my love for nature is probably connected to this is where I'm probably closest to my creator, you know? So I'm not a religious guy, but I'm a minister of the gospel. And so I don't push that. But what I'll say is, when I'm outdoors, I can appreciate creation. There are people that are God-fearing people, and then there are religious people. And I tend to fall into the God-fearing side. You know, so I appreciate creation. I appreciate nature. I appreciate those sunsets and those sunrises and everything that comes in between. But at the end of the day, I'm just a good old boy that wants to have fun. I'm close with family. And we know that we're only here for just a time, for a period. Our lifespan goes by so quick. And if you have kids, which I know you do, you see them grow up. They grow up quick. So you want to make the most of every moment. So that's a little bit about myself. I say, you know, if I left of legacy, you know, when I'm dead and gone, I want people to, you know, look back at what I left behind and say, well, that's a guy that he treated people right. He was fun to be around, and he's a straight shooter. You know, he didn't beat around the bush. You didn't ever have to guess where he landed on a subject matter. You knew what he thought, you know, and I'm pretty straightforward that way. Some people like that. Some people don't, but that's how I come across. And we do this for fun. So we started the Menser Outdoors is one of the pages that we run. That's my family run page. It really started with my brother growing up when we would go to hunting camp or we would go on a hunt. We would always document in a log book the adventure, the journey, right? So we would keep a journal of every single time we went to the cabin, every single time we went. We used to hunt up in Potter County and campers whenever I first started. The hunting was so good. I was too young. I didn't know how good the hunting really was. I would get cold and I would get up and I would move and start walking around. But what my brother had started was like a family journal. And so we would just document, hey, went to camp this weekend, cut firewood. Went to camp this weekend, we had, you know, burgers and beans and scouted for turkeys, you know, whatever the subject matter was. And then if you harvested a deer, you killed a bird or something like that, we would take a picture and we would put that in the old photo album back in the day, right? So he carried around a camera back in the 80s and the 90s, and he'd snap a photo. And, you know, once that film filled up, he would go get it published and put it into the photo album. Well, as time and technology advanced, we've got probably 30 years of a logbook up at our cabin for every single trip, you know, and some of the stories are tall tales. It depends on whoever entered the journal entry into the logbook. You know, some of it's a really good storytelling. Some of it, you know, I certainly won't tell online. but... You know, what I started to do was, I'm going to think how I want to go with this story. Once I got a smartphone, you know, with a camera, and antler restrictions came into Pennsylvania where you had to have three on one side in archery season, I'm sitting there and I'm watching this trail and I'm in my tree stand and, I see this little young buck. You know, and it looks like maybe it's a spike, maybe it's a 4-point, but I see him coming in from about 80 yards in some mature wooded area. And so I'm like, man, he's too small, but I'm going to get my camera out. I'm just going to sit here and get some pictures of him, you know? So I turned the video on and I started filming him, and this trail comes about 30 yards within of where my tree stand was. And he got to about 40 yards or whatever. My eyes are good enough. And I saw he had three on one side. And so then I had to take my phone, put it in my shirt pocket, put it away, get my bow off the hook, not, you know, draw and do all this unseen within the last 30 yards. But he was a young buck, you know, and in Pennsylvania, you know, the young ones, you can shoot them a lot easier than the old ones. The old ones don't get that big by being, or they don't get that old by being stupid. But this deer let me do it, and I was able to draw back and shoot this little buck. And then I sat there and I was like, man, this is pretty cool. So then when we went to search for the deer, you know, check for the blood trail, check for the arrow, you know, I captured all that on video and stuff. And I thought, these guys that film themselves hunting, you know, I was able to recover the deer. He didn't run far. I had the approach. I had the recovery. I just didn't have the action shot, right? And I thought, I could do this. That was pretty fun. You know, as much as harvesting the animals fun, you know, and we use the meat, I thought this was pretty fun. So from that point forward, I'm like, I got to figure out a way to get the action shot. And I started a journey down a path of self-filming, right? And so with that, you can't put all that in the logbook that I started to talk about. You can't put a film in the photo album, you know, so... I started just posting short videos on YouTube and Instagram and social media and that sort of stuff. And we just called it Mentzer Outdoors because that's our family name. So we still run that page. My wife and I, we like to go camping and we got dogs and we want to be outside. So that page is pretty much anything from hunting, fishing, camping, hiking. If you're outside, you'd love the outdoors. That's what we do. But... with that, a couple of years ago, I was sitting down here at my swimming pool and I was thinking about all that, the pictures, all the memories, all the stories that were in that logbook. I thought, there's got to be a cool way. Everybody's got a podcast. How hard would it be to sit down and do something like we're doing tonight and just talk to other guys and get their stories? Mm. And so that was kind of like the genesis of shifting from just having an Instagram or a YouTube page, which a lot of guys do, to actually trying to create or build a product, which is the podcast. Because we don't sell anything. We're just, like I said, we're just good old boys that like to hang out and blue collar fellas that like to tell stories. And so we started the podcast, I think. What year did we start the podcast?
Gotta look on the hat.
2023, we started the podcast. And I started out by just interviewing family, getting some of those stories that we've all been told amongst ourselves over years and years. And then, eventually we started to branch out and bring on some other guests. So there's two kinds of podcasts out there. There's podcasts where you get a subject matter on an expert and you bring them in on the topic and you talk about topics and you have the expert come in and educate you on that. And I really like that type of, like, if it was just me doing it as a host, that's what I would do. But I've connected with so many cool people, you know, online and people that I know in the area. Pennsylvania's rich with, you know, outdoorsmen and the history of guys that just grow up hunting like you and myself. And so when I ran into Chris and Chris and I connected, we realized, hey, we grew up about the same time. You know, we're about the same age. We had a lot of things in common. And he's not that far from me physically. You know, we're both in Pennsylvania and we don't live that far from one another. So I invited him to come on to the show. And I don't know, just it felt right. Like one thing led to another. Next thing, you know, I offered for him, hey, why don't you come on more than just that one time as a guest? Why don't you come on and co-host me? And he came on and he helped with the show. And man, we've just been having so much fun. The other type of show, other than a topical show, is when you bring on guests. And so we've really, in the last year, been very intentional about trying to bring on guests. You can get guests from anywhere, but we've tried to be very intentional about bringing on guests in this region, like Central PA, Northern Maryland, West Virginia, New York, you know, this Mid-Atlantic, Northeast region. And what we're finding is we were able to build a collaborative group of guys that were just like us. You know, hey, I've got an Instagram page. I love the outdoors. I like talking hunting and fishing. And now we have guys in the group that, all right, I've got the turkey nuts that love to talk turkey. And we got the guys that are, you know, they're down on the Chesapeake Bay and they're fishing or they're fishing snakeheads. And, you know, we've got guys that are on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, the waterfowl guys or the Sitka hunting guys. And so we cover it from one end to the other just by meeting people through this medium, which is the podcast that we do. And that's how we met you. You know, it's kind of the, you know, we joke about it, but hey, I met a guy online and, you know, here we are, you know, but we're good friends now. And it's not just Chris, but we've got a whole group of people that enjoy creating content. They enjoy taking photos and sharing those stories. And the podcast, I don't know where we'll go from here as we go into the future, but over the past year, we've really been intentional about trying to connect people with one another, not just connect them to us.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned about the meeting people online part. So a couple of years ago, I don't remember what year it was, but I got to go to the ATA show with a couple of guys on the Sportsman's Empire Network. And, mm-hmm. you know, Dan Johnson that runs the Nine Finger Chronicles and Sportsman's Empire, you know, he brought us out and a couple of the state-specific shows and other guys were there. And we got to have dinner together. And it was probably half a dozen of us or so. And I forget what was said. Something about, you know, be careful meeting strangers and meeting people online. And that's, you know, you can run into some real creepy. Oh, I know what it was. There was a guy that found out that I guess he followed Dan and found out that he was at the ATA show. And he messaged him. It was like, dude, I know you're here. I really want to meet you. And Dan's like, nope, I got a hard rule. When I get creepy messages like that, I don't respond to them. I don't meet people online. And we all looked at him. We were like, yeah, because this doesn't count. And the funniest part was Josh Raley, who at the time was doing the Wisconsin Sportsman and had been doing a lot of the episode stuff. He was rooming with Dan, and I'm pretty sure that was the first time they actually met in person and they roomed together. So they're like, oh, and you don't like meeting people online? Gotcha. I see how that is. But it's so funny. You do develop a bond over the outdoors and hunting quicker than
otherwise. It's common interest. Common interest. You know, one of the things I said whenever I realized when we started doing the podcast, and like I said, we started, I was interviewing my dad, I was interviewing my nephews, I was interviewing my brother and getting some of those stories, my cousins, the people that I grew up hunting with, just sharing the old war stories of, you know, growing up, driving deer and, you know, going to hunting camp and that sort of stuff. When I had my first, like, I guess, like real guest on the show, it was just a guy. It was a birthday party for like one of our friends. They had a baby. He's turning 1 year old, and you know, 1 year old, that's a big birthday for parents to celebrate, basically. So, you know, we went and a bunch of their friends were there, and you know, I'm a gentleman, you know, I'm just going to sit there and hang out and enjoy the cake and the ice cream or whatever. But you strike up a conversation with the other guy wearing a camo hat, basically. You know, you got a bunch of people that you don't know. You find somebody that's wearing camouflage. I'm like, I could probably talk to this guy. And we just started talking, and you realize real quick, you've got a lot of things in common. Your passions are the same, mm-hmm. You know? And so I brought him, I asked him, hey, would you want to come on the show and talk? Because he was a waterfowl, you know, he's a waterfowl guy from the West Coast. And so he had some state calling championships, and you know, he was into it. And I'm not a waterfowl guy at all. I'm a bow hunter. So like, teach me a little bit about what you know. And he sat here, he came to my house and sat here, and we talked for 3-4 hours. You know, I got 3 episodes out of it, you know, just talking to that guy, like part one, part two, part three. Mm. And I realized that, you know, this pool of people that love the outdoors is so large. You don't want to have a small view. You got to be willing to go out and talk to other people. And you got to have a bit of a personality to do this too. You know, so one of the things I joke about is, you know, I'm a legend in my own mind, you know, but Chris is like, it's not always about you, Ron, you know, but if I can get you talking, then I did my job, you know? And I've surrounded myself with a lot of people that make that easy to do, and it's fun to do. And so, you know, we started with the podcast. We probably, not too long ago, we hit our 100th episode. So I feel like, you know, we've figured it out, a rhythm of what works. And we've got guests coming on, and we're continuing to tell stories. And so it's an extension of that log book that I started, you know, talking about earlier with my family. And it's a digital format now. You know, it's not all being written down, but we're getting stories from all sorts of people, from all sorts of walks of life. We all have different experiences, and we're having a lot of fun doing it.
The good old logbook. You know, it's funny, like we've got so many ways of documenting history right now between the videos and, you know, YouTube. And, you know, that's why a lot of people say they film their hunts, right? They can document it and have that for a time. And, you know, when you go back, writing down was the main way to document something. And there's I think every cabin that I've ever been to, you know, a north central or northern Pennsylvania type cabin, that whether it's an incorporated camp or a family camp or whatever, like they all have a logbook. And, you know, like some of that was, you know, now we're so, you know, ingrained in our phones and, you know, connect with everybody very quickly. Like you can have a group text with camp and be like, hey, who's going up to camp this weekend? That sort of thing, blah, blah, blah. But all right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost spring and summer planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed.
And there was a time if they had, you know, 8, 10, 12, whatever members in a cabin, the way to communicate with guys was, who was at camp last, and write in the book. And you can go up and say, oh,
you know, Tom was up here this past weekend, and he fixed something was wrong with the water heater, but he fixed it. Oh, and he changed some lights around and fixed a switch that was busted here. Oh, okay. Oh, and he found a problem that he didn't get to fix, and that's how he left camp, and that's how I can address it when I'm up or stuff. And then you go into telling stories, and man, there's some unique things. You know, we actually, I think it was. I'm going to say somewhere between 2005 and 2010, I'm going to say. The logbook for our camp that started back in, I believe, 1966
Wow.
was written in from front to end, and we had to start a new logbook. So now we've begun the whole process over. But when you go through some of them stories, it is just crazy. And some of it's simple stuff, like guys forgetting that there's 31 days in the month of October, and when they go to write the next day, they wrote October 32nd.
Yep.
Just stuff like that. But the stories in there, it's incredible. And the flashbacks and the memories, and it's what's my favorite thing I've been able to do is when, you know, I'm a young pup relative to the guys in camp, and you get that logbook out, and there's guys that lived those experiences there, and you bring it back, and you start reading it, and they'll go from a story 30, 40 years ago, they'll start telling the story in detail, and you just sit there and listen. What an awesome way of camaraderie. I think it's
that's what it's about for us. That's what it's about for us. And, you know, it depends on who wrote it down, because you get their version.
Yeah.
And, you know, of the story. So there's always details that are left out. And our logbook, I think we bought, because we used to hunt in Potter County, you know, for years when I first started. It was amazing hunting up there. But we bought some land in Bedford County in the late 90s, I'd say. Mid to late 90s, we bought some. And so we got a little plot of land. It borders up against, you know, some state land. And so we got tons of space to spread out and hunt. And we started a new logbook when we bought that property. And so probably from like 97, 98 through today, it's recent. And last year, maybe 2 years ago, it got to be, because we would just, it was just a three-ring binder with some tablet paper, and, you know, sometimes it's written in pen, sometimes it's written in pencil, and through the years, wear and tear, like some of that's starting to fade, and some of it's starting to get old. And so what I did, let me pull this down off of the shelf, I brought it home and I typed it up.
Wow.
And so I got a hardback cover here with a picture of my dad. I'll put that up for the camera.
Wow.
You know, at the meat pole with, you know, one of his trophies. And I've got all the stories in here. Now we still have the original logbook, but this is like a coffee table thing. And when you're talking about when you pull that thing out, what I like is when we're at cabin, we're hunting all week, and it's a rainy day. Say the hunting's garbage, and you're just sitting around camp and there's not a whole lot to do. Breaking those old stories out and reading through those or looking through those old pictures and stuff, you can learn a lot from the guys that lived through it, like you said. And I don't know, that's what we're all about. That's everything to us.
And so that whole description that you're talking about and I'm talking about, like, we've lived that. From little on up, that's all I know. And one of the things that's become very apparent to me in the last few years through this podcast, I just thought everybody had that. I just thought everybody had those experiences.
That's right.
A lot of people have not. And I've recently drawn and connected the dots that, you know, between the Facebook groups and the all the different outlets and media pages and stuff. And like, you see people asking questions, getting together in these different ways, unconventional ways to hunt and share content and do all this stuff. That all stems, in my opinion, not necessarily from hunting and self-ambition, but from that desire to have camaraderie, camp atmosphere. And even though it's not... The camp is not the location. Like you had a camping in Potter County, now Bedford County. There's a destination that's camp.
Yeah.
Camp for people a lot of the time now is not necessarily going to camp. Camp is something completely different. Like, and it might be a tradition of going and hunting this park or whatever it is. But people are hungry for that. And I never realized how much people were hungry for that until I started doing this podcast.
So for a living, I work with people, you know, and I, you know, as I mentioned coming in, you know, to the beginning, like I engage people. I see how people interact. Here's something that I found because of working with people for as long as I have. There is a general sense within our nature. It's just born within us. Like people want to belong and they want to belong to something, right? Everybody wants a seat at the table. And so, what we try to do with, you know, the Tracks and Tackle Collaborative, which is the group that we formed as we've met a bunch of people, is we try to create space where it doesn't matter where you come from or what you bring to the table, right? There's a place for you. There's a seat for you at the table. And frankly, I don't have, like, I can only bring my own life experiences. I can't lead you down a road to some place that I've never been because I've never been there. I don't know how to take you to where I have. I can only take you to where I've been for myself. But you can come to the table and you have different life experiences. And so you can like help complete the picture. The more people that you have come contributing to the table or whatever the collaborative group is, I'm just using table as a symbolism here, but we need what you carry to bring into the group. And when you get enough guys with enough different backgrounds but similar passions, like, man, we really can – you bond over these things and you connect, and it's that belonging that you were talking about. People feel welcome, they feel appreciated, and they feel valued.
So here's a tough question I'm trying to work through. You know, we're using camp as an example. And people want to belong. And I don't think people don't want to belong today. I think they do. But Ron, why is it harder and harder for people to feel like they belong or want to belong at that same table? I don't know if that makes sense or not, but I'm thinking about it from the perspective of how we've had traditions and how we do things across all our hunting lives and generations. And you see stuff dying. You see controversy and things changing. And I understand the only constant life is everything changes, but why would it change if people feel like they belong? So I'm trying to figure out in many cases what is different.
I don't know the answer to that. You know, my knee-jerk response is that I think of the youngster, all right, in our group. Like my family group, we would get together and we would drive for deer. You know, we had some family farms. There was plenty of, you know, the farmers wanted the deer cleared off, you know, growing up, and we would drive. So we would hunt as a family and we would work that in. But when somebody would have a kid and the kid would grow up and get to the hunt age where they could come hunt, we were very intentional to make room for that newcomer to come in. Like we didn't, how do I want to say it? Like we set them up to succeed so that they would fall in love with the support, you know? And so we wouldn't send them into the briars and the brush to drive, you know, the hard hills for deer and stuff. We would set them up with a stander, with a, you know, somebody that's going to guide them and teach them the way to do it the right way until they'd have some success. Once they had some success, then they became a dog and then they had to go, you know, earn their stripes and bust brush and go through the briars and stuff with us. But if you're intentional about creating space for them, new people to come in, and that doesn't even have to necessarily be somebody's kid that gets to be old enough to hunt. It could be a 30-year-old guy. You know, one of the guys in our group, our collaborative group, he works with a young man who's interested in the outdoors, but nobody's ever took him fishing. Nobody's ever took him hunting. Nobody's ever like taking them under their wing. And so like this past summer, that's what, you know, one of our buddies did. He's like, you're going to come with me. We're going to catch some catfish. You're going to come with me and you're going to shoot your first deer. when this kid shot his first deer, like, he was texting all of us. I mean, it was like the world to him, you know, but all it took was somebody to make space for him. And I think, you know, this is one of the things that we talk about a lot, because I'm a deer hunter, and there's, when you have a target buck or you're an archery hunter, it's kind of like you against yourself. You know, we go out into the woods, we put the time in, there's a lot of solitude, you know, you'll spend days, hours, you know, weeks, and sometimes months of just you and yourself and the Lord for 30 seconds of fun when that deer does come through. Chris and his guys, he likes to waterfowl hunt because he can clown around and he can joke in the blind and they can talk and have, like, he's a social person, you know? And so there's, as deer hunters, you know, how do you make space for somebody else when we have limited resources, or maybe I don't have that many places to go hunting, you know? So am I going to give up my hunting spot to bring somebody along with me? Like, that's a paradox, you know? So anyway, I'm just rambling maybe a little bit to respond to you, but that's my knee jerk reaction, is like, we have to be intentional to make room for new people to come in, because I know people that watch us, they watch our videos and they follow us and they're all about it, but they'll never go out and go hunting because they don't want to sit in the cold. They don't want to put in the time. You know what I mean? It's just not for them. And that's fine too, you know, but, I don't know. I want to see the sport grow. I don't want to see it dwindle. I want to see people get excited about this. Like, we are, we're talking about camaraderie because we've tasted it and we know what it's like, you know, we've experienced it, but you can't put into words what that is. You have to feel it. You have to get it into your veins, I guess.
So with relationship to bow hunting, Ron, you're a bow hunter, I'm a bow hunter. It's something that's very passionate for both of us. You know, you talked about how bow hunting, target deer, stuff like that, it can become like a one-on-one ordeal. And it's your time in the woods alone, you know, you against yourself. And there's some healthy things about that in life and everything that is. But there's also some healthy point or unhealthy things that can facilitate and come from that. And it's a gray area in when you cross the line. So, like, in your mind, when do you cross the line from bow hunting, individual sport? Where does it cross the line into being unhealthy?
Usually when my wife says, all right, you've been away too much, you know, because she knows, right? I mean, we've been married for over 20 years. We got married young, and still the love of my life, and, you know, keeps me on my toes and holds me accountable. But when she says, all right, you've been gone for so many months, you probably need to slow down, that's crossing the line for me. Like, I hear that. You know, I like to hunt, you know, I hunt hard PA, you know, and there years I've gone out and I've hunted Ohio, and, you know, I like to hunt local and I like to hunt our property out in Western PA. And if it's up to me, like, every waking moment I'm sitting in an office, you know, I run a couple of businesses, and, I spent a lot of brain power on getting, you know, that operation running so that I can generate revenue so that I can take time off and go hunt. But my brain isn't on, like, and everybody knows, everybody in my company knows, the ownership knows, the employees, they all know that about August, Ron's brain starts to shift, and he wants to go hunt deer. And he wants to scout deer and prep for deer hunting. They like it when I bring jerky in, and that they like the fruits of the spoil. But I don't know. So, like, I try to hunt hard. For me, because the type of work that I do, I have people pulling on me all the time. And one of the things that I say is the people that get the most out of me are the ones that pull the most on me. Some people aren't afraid to call and text and say, hey, Ron, you know, what do you think about this? Other people, they see I'm busy and they don't want to bother me. And so who gets the most of my energy? Well, it's the people that pull on me more, you know, but, to answer your question, you know, when my wife says, all right, you've been gone or you've been absent, it's time to like make time for family. She doesn't say that often, but it's, you know, she's very long suffering in that. But I say that's the time whenever for me, all right, I probably need to come back over onto, I've crossed the line a little bit. And I respect that.
Yeah, that's probably the very best way to put it because, you know, I've talked about it a little bit and I've never gone into much detail, but I've had experiences in my life where I've allowed hunting to take rank over certain aspects of family and relationships. And it's created mm-hmm. some pretty big strain. When you zoom out, it doesn't seem that gray. I guess it's in the moment where it seems very, very much a gray area in where, because I get so blinded and so, I don't know, rut craze maybe. I don't know what the word is of just how I view things. Yeah, my focus shifts and like I always, yeah, a lot of people seem to turn hunting off sometime, you know, around rifle season. You know, maybe they turn it off after the first day. Maybe they turn it off the first Saturday. Maybe they turn it off at the end of the rifle season. I always have, and it's just as bad now. I mean, hunting season is a continuous buildup for me. And yeah. believe it or not, when I am the most fired up for hunting, it's like in the new year. Like, I'm not talking just like going out. It's like deer hunting's over. I'm going to go predator hunt. I am ate up with deer hunting in late season. And, like, I think it's just because the season's building up so much and it's got to that point. We've had so many great experiences, and I want them to keep going. So I don't want it to end. So then when you get into late season, whether we're doing flintlock drives or, you know, late season doe hunting or, you know, I'm hunting for a buck yet and solo adventure or whatever, like, I just don't want it to end. And that's when I'm most in hunting brain, and I like there's always like a week long lag before I can get back into whatever normal is once that season ends and get back into work and reality mode. And I don't know why that is for me, but it's just this continuous buildup.
You're not alone, and I think there are a lot of guys out there that people that are gonna like listen or watch to a show like this can relate to what we're talking about. You know. In my family, if we're having a cookout, if it's Labor Day and we're sitting around the picnic table and we're grilling burgers and dogs, we're talking about hunting. Like it's just the way that it is, you know, in comparison, like my wife's family's like, she did not grow up hunting. So it's like, she's been adopted into this culture. It's a completely different culture. When we decided to get married, like, you know, our wedding date was scheduled around hunting seasons. You know, we weren't getting married in the spring and we weren't getting married in the fall. And like, we had to figure that out. That is just the way that my brain works. And it's also the way that I was raised, you know, it's second nature. So, I think the guys that like listen to a show like this and follow a program like this, they're going to relate to what you're talking about. It doesn't stop even in this time of year. You know, we're thinking about the next, I'm thinking about trout fishing right now, you know? You know, a lot of guys are out there shed hunting right now. I haven't gotten really into that, you know, shed hunting, but, I think it's a cool concept, but, some guys just, it never stops. They don't turn it off.
Yeah. And to each their own with what interests them. Like shed hunting's cool. I like shed hunting, but like I was talking about this with Chris when I had him on. He had in the background of the camera, he had a European mount of a buck up. And he's like, yeah, he's like, I didn't shoot that. He's like, you know, somebody in his family got it and gave it to him and he hung it up. And he's like, I don't know, it's kind of cool. He's like, it doesn't really mean much to me. And I'm the same way. Like when I see a pair of shed antlers or I find a deadhead, I don't care if it's a boner. Like it just doesn't. That doesn't mean anything to me. It's for some reason when it's got my tag attached to it that it's like this. border, like I have to watch myself in the terminology when it comes to idols and worship and stuff like it, that's when it's really important to me. So like going out and finding the sheds of a buck that I'm after, even in that case, like that doesn't do anything in building the story for me. It's like teach their own. This time of year is always a weird lag time. And I guess with that lag time, my mind goes amok as far as what am I going to do in the future? What's going to keep me motivated throughout this next hunting season? What am I looking forward to? And you know, I was curious for you, like after this past hunting season, Ron, what are you looking forward to for this hunting season? Because I know it's crossed your mind already. And what things are you thinking about and planning that keep you fueled during this quote-unquote off season?
All right, so two things. I'm going to answer your question, and I'm going to roll into a story if I can get my thoughts straight. So to answer your question, you know, where my mind is, the property where we hunt, it's like, I mean, gosh, it's difficult to get it. There are deer outside, like where our cabin is. There are deer, like literally right outside of our cabin. You don't have to go far to get a deer if you can sit still. But if you want to shoot a big deer, you got to go into real hell holes. You know, you got to go into like take a hike and be ready to pack it out. And you got to go to where people don't go because there are nice deer in the area, but they're not where the people are. Right. So every year, this time of year, I'm thinking, man, next year I'm really going to get out there and go to where no man's gone before. I'm going to do it. I'm going to push myself and I'm just going to go further. I'm push myself harder than I have in years past. Now, in archery season, I've got stands where I know the deer are going to come through and, you know, if I need, I'm going to fill my freezer, you know. So do I always push myself as hard as I should in the season? No. But this time of year, when I'm thinking about what drives me, what am I going to go after? I'm just always thinking about pushing myself to the next limit, to the next level, going further than I have in the past. All right. So that's the answer to your question. But what you were saying previous to that, when you were talking about the meaning of a deer that you take yourself versus finding like a booner that's a deadhead or finding, you know, shed hunting and things like that, which I think is awesome. I think it's fun. It's like finding a four-leaf clover. But this year I passed on a lot of yearlings, like little deer. You know, I had a lot of young bucks, young doe moving through, and I got a lot on camera because that's what I do. I'm sit there, I'm filming them. But I let a lot walk because they just were too young. And, you know, I'm a meat hunter at the end of the day. Like, I'm a killer. I'm not a big buck hunter. I will kill big bucks if I have the opportunity. But if a small basket rack comes through, I'm going to shoot it too because I'm all about filling my freezer. I use that meat. And so it got to be rut, and we take an annual, rut vacation where my family and I will spend 3 to 5 days at our camp and really hunt hard. And I'd passed so many deer that I was really starting to get the itch. I'm like, man, it's November, season's getting to be, you know, I don't have deer in the freezer yet. And so first day of the rutcation, I got to our camp before everybody else. I went up in the morning, I took the day off, and I think my brother and my nephew were coming up in the evening to hunt the rest of the week with me. It was cold. I mean, it was incredibly cold and windy. And usually in the wind is not your best situation for hunting archery to begin with. But, you know, I was just itching to get out and get an evening sit in, you know, because I took the day off of work. So I went out and I sat in my stand for a couple of hours, and I had a nice little basket rack come in. Now, I just got a new bow in the spring, and so it hasn't drawn first blood yet. I've let all these small deer walk, you know, through October and into November, and I had a legal buck, you know, come into where I was sitting. Just watching over an oak flat, and he was probably 20, 25 yards. And the wind had died down enough that I felt confident in taking the shot. So I drew back and I let an arrow eat. And that buck just stood there. Didn't jump, didn't duck, didn't run off. He just stood there. And I'm sitting there and I'm scratching my head saying, now he's only 25 yards away. I shoot my bow well enough that I know I did not miss this deer, you know, but I'm questioning myself. And he just gingerly walks off. He walks off about 40 yards and he lays down and he beds down. I can see him. I'm watching him bedded down 40 yards from me. It's rut. There are doe moving like right past him within 10, 15 yards of his tree that he's bedded down at. And he's not getting up. I'm like, he's hit, but he's not acting like he's hit. Maybe I hit him back. So I'm all these things run through your head, right? When you make the shot, you take the shot you think is the right, the ethical shot. Long story short, I won't stretch this too much. It gets to be, you know, he gets up and he wanders off. And the wind's blowing leaves, so it's like hard to see the blood trail or whatever. I actually had a pair of doe. There was also, I think I counted like 11 deer that night that came in to me in that evening. And I had two doe come in with like 5 yards of my stand, and I had tags to burn. And so I took one of those doe, and it reacted. Because I wanted to have meat on the meat pole when my brother and my nephew showed up at camp, right? I wanted to already have, you know, let's check the box and get this week started. So it gets to be about dark, and I get down, and I check where I shot the doe, because it was only like 10 yards from the tree. I find my arrow, and it passed clean through. I'm like, well, all right, that's first blood. I'm gonna walk down here to where I shot this buck, which is only another 15 yards. I found the arrow, and it looked like I got stomach. I said, well, okay, that explains it, right? It was a pass-through, clean pass-through, but there was no blood trail on this deer. So I'm dealing with, it's dark. There's no blood trail on this deer. I could probably track the doe and recover her tonight, but she went the same direction. And I don't want to like bump this buck if I hit him, you know, in a gut and not recover him tomorrow. So what do? Like you wrestle and you back out, you know, and I got up there the next morning, and because the wind was blowing and the leaves were dry and everything, like if there were blood on some leaves, it was tough tracking. Mm. I'll just say that, you know, you can't see where they ran off and kicked it up. It was really tough tracking. And so I thought to myself, okay, I know this terrain. Now, this is where the being a woodsman matters, right? You know the terrain. You know where they come from. You know where they usually go to. I know where the closest water is, and it's not anywhere near. I was on the top of the ridge of a mountain. So I hopped up, you know, on a ridge, which is about 75 yards behind me. I said, I'm going to just walk this ridge out, and I'm going to see if I can see that, you know, anything laying on this flat that I was watching over. And I didn't walk 50 yards and I saw a tree right on the ridge where there was a pool of blood where a deer had bedded down. And I thought it was the doe had bedded down. And if it went back over the backside of the hill, it would have been a hell of a drag to get them out of there. But I looked down over and 3 or 4 yards lays this buck. Now I tell you all that story to bring it back to what you said. I could find antlers and that's cool. But putting my hands on that deer that I knew I took its life, and there was a fear that I might have lost it. Recovering that deer means so much to me and to most hunters. You know what I mean? When you have that, it's not certain if I'm going to get this deer or not. I sat there recognizing I'm the first person ever to put hands on this animal, recognizing the animal gave its life to fill my freezer, and, you know, just thanking God that it didn't just go off and die and the coyotes got it. You know, that carries so much weight compared to me finding a deadhead, you know. And the cool thing was, on the drag back to my stand, I found the doe that I had shot too. And so I didn't get them on the opening day of my rut vacation, but on day number two, I recovered both, and it was an awesome week. So very long-winded story to accentuate what you said, but it really matters when you do it yourself. And there's a story that goes with it.
100%. I mean, don't get me wrong. I tend to focus and think about bigger, mature, older bucks when I hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been many times where there's been deer that when I was bow hunting, I was going to shoot, but then came up with a reason not to shoot and let them go. And then, later in the season when I'm gun hunting and my standards change a little bit and experience changes a little bit, I kind of changed that outlook. And there's a lot of people that argue that philosophy. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter as long as it's something that, what you said, carries weight and has meaning to you. For me, when I go out the first night of archery season this past year and had a really nice, I'm going to guess he was like a 2-year-old buck coming under my tree. What a cool experience. He was 15 yards and I got to video him and everything else, but it was literally the first 2-3 hours of my season. And that was a deer that I just didn't want to be done hunting yet.
Right.
Now you fast forward my season and you get to the last day of rifle season and you look at the buck that I killed, it's almost the same size deer. And there's a lot of people say, well, why didn't you just shoot that one the first day? Because I wouldn't have got the same experience. I wouldn't have done the same things that I did this year pursuing something.
Right.
I like hunting. I like shooting stuff, but it's killing's a piece of it. And when I shoot one early, it better have some pretty deep meaning to it.
Yeah. The joys in the journey is what we like to say. And, so we have a couple of slogans, with our brand. We say nature is our playground. We're just grown boys, and we want to enjoy the outdoors. But another one that we say is we say hunt your hunt, man.
Yeah.
So like what makes you happy? If somebody wants to like push themselves and they're going to pass up on, a 160 buck because they want the 170 or the 200, like God bless them. I'm not, I'm happy with something that's going to be 116 or 120 and fill my freezer. But hunt your hunt. Like I don't care if you hunt with a crossbow. I don't care if you hunt with a recurve, your traditional guy, whatever you need to do to be deadly, you hunt your hunt. And, as long as it has meaning for you, because at the end of the day, I guess this is Ron in a nutshell. Like at the end of the day, like the gold is in the memories. The gold is in the story, that's where the real reward is, because, I'm going to eat that deer and that deer's going to, go, it'll be gone. But what remains is the story. It's the tail in the logbook. It's the antlers on the wall. It's the friends that drug it out with you and helped you recover the animal. Like that's where the gold is for me.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. I look at the current stack of antlers that I have sitting in a bin right now on top of my freezer. And the only reason they're sitting that way is I'm in the process of finishing my basement, which by the way, doing drywall really sucks. But anyway,
been there, done that.
Oh my gosh. I'm at the peak of the worst part of it right now. And that's doing the spackling. I hate that part, but, no, those antlers that are sitting in a tub on top of my freezer, and what's going to happen with those antlers is when I finish my basement, they're going to get strategically placed in that basement that I can go down and look at them. And there was a time where it was a thing for me to be a little bit braggish about and be thankful. Look what all I've done. And I can honestly say that's not the case anymore. But what's cool is when I can look at such a deer and say, you know, that buck I shot in 2024, he's not the biggest buck that I've ever killed, but what a crazy story that happened. And this is when I did it and where I did it and who I did it with. And, you know, he's not the biggest buck that I've ever shot, but you know what? That deer got me really excited. And it's just stuff like that. And that carries weight. And at the end of the day, I'm going to do it with what makes me happy. I think for me, closing that thought would be, sometimes I struggle when I asked you what you're thinking about moving forward next with, like what excites you. You're talking about pushing yourself to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I struggle to balance the two things that we talked about in this episode, struggling to balance what's next and not pushing too far before I cross the line and start to create issues within other aspects of my life. That has become a very challenging balance for me, back and forth. And I don't have the answer of how the right way for Mitchell to manage it is. I feel like I still get it wrong.
Yeah. Look, you said the word, and it's balance, right? It's anything that we enjoy in life, enjoy it in moderation, because too much of anything is not good for us. So finding that balance, you know, we all have different shoulders. Like some of us have broader shoulders than others, and we can carry different weights and different responsibilities. And it's, you know, it goes back to that conversation of what everybody brings to the table is uniquely them. But finding that balance between, you know, dreaming about what's next and being driven and not going too far is, I think it's not like a cookie cutter case. It's different for you than it is for me, than it is for the next guy. And, you know, that's what's beautiful about it too. You know, that no two hunters are exactly alike or exactly the same, but, our passions are also intricately woven together, you know, near neighbor, that, we can sit here and we can talk about this stuff and shoot, an hour goes by just like that.
That it does. And with that, we're about at an hour, and, usually this is the point where I say, hey, I want to be mindful of Ron's time and have him on another time and tell more stories. So Ron, thanks for coming on the show and chatting with us on this show, and anything you want to leave us with?
Hey, listen, it's been my pleasure, Mitchell. It's been nice to, you know, get to know you a little bit, and certainly is my pleasure to come on the show, and appreciate you coming and joining us on our show as well. I would just say hunt your hunt. You know, recognize that nature is our playground. That's the sort of the motto that we go by. Enjoy every day to the fullest. You know, life goes by so quick. Appreciate what you got. We do a lot of time. We complain when it rains. We complain when it's hot. We complain when it's cold. Just embrace the day. Nature's your playground. Go out there and live it.
I like it. Hey, guys, if you like stuff you listen to, check out Tracks and Tackle, Mensur Outdoors. Check out everything he has. Listen to Ron's podcast and, you know, join him with the rest of the team. They're a good group of guys. It was a pleasure having you.
Appreciate it.